All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're heading back into the MCU to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, a third in the series of the Ant-Man movies and a 30-something in the series of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's a lot of these movies, and things are getting weird here, but we're going to try to figure some things out as we get into the conversation. Joining me is filmmaker Rick Ives, who actually has worked on a bunch of these Marvel movies and the Marvel shows, so it's really awesome to have him here on the show. We have a great conversation, a lot of great puzzle pieces we get into, so that's coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can, of course, find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Good Pods, wherever you're listening right now. Make sure you're subscribed. We have our live episode on Cocaine Bear, which at the time this goes up, we'll have just recorded last night. It will be up on the feed next week, so I'm sure it was a lot of fun. I'm recording this in advance, of course, but lots of episodes on the way, so make sure you're subscribed. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget, we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. So lots of great stuff over there. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. We appreciate the support. And with that said, let's try to figure out this Ant-Man movie. All right, we're going back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and joining me today, we've got filmmaker Rick Ives to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which is quite a mouthful of a title. Rick, how are you doing?
Great. Here we go. Put on your tiny little miniature seatbelts because it's going to be a ride.
Sometimes they're tiny. Sometimes they're very, very big. And
that's right.
Yeah. It just depends on how big you want to be in that particular moment. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll get into Quantumania and everything about the film as we're going. But before we do, it's your first time on the show.
Yes.
Tell my listeners a little about you and what you do.
Oh, thank you. Rick Ives. I am a independent filmmaker and also assistant editor who works on a lot of these Marvel movies that you have seen before, many of which you've probably talked about on here. Not this one, not Ant-Man, but
not yet.
I've been in the industry for 10 plus years, and my side gig is doing editing of low budget features. So I kind of have both a foot on both worlds where I do edit. I'm the editor on low budget features and assistant editor on the big time stuff. And then just recently, I wrote, directed, edited my own indie feature that we're going to talk a little bit about today, but
sure,
we can get into that later. Is that it? Yep. What else you want to know, Dave? Tell me.
I mean, it sounds like you kind of summed yourself up in a nice little way there. And yeah, you know, we'll talk about more about those things that you do.
Neglected to mention, fan of the show. I think it's a great format. I love the banter. I love all the guests that you guys have on. So
yeah,
thank you for contributing to, you know, my entertainment.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you enjoy the show, and hopefully we'll get some of that banter going, and hopefully we'll figure out this movie, and we'll also talk about your movie in a little bit. So first of all, I felt like we should start this off by me saying, because look, I've kind of been vocal about this on Twitter and stuff, like I was kind of disappointed with this movie.
Yeah.
That being said, the Ant-Man movies are my favorite Marvel movies.
Oh, okay.
I love the character. I love Paul Rudd. I love the lightheartedness of these movies versus some of the other ones. I just don't know why Ant-Man is the character to thrust all of the weight of the next 10, 12, whatever Marvel movies on.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
I don't know. How did you feel about the way that this one was kind of constructed as this cornerstone of phase five, so to speak?
Yeah, that definitely was interesting. I haven't really thought about an answer to a question like that. You had told me ahead of time that you weren't the biggest fan of this one so far. I'm still trying to kind of process. I just watched it yesterday, how I landed on it. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
There are other movies out there, even in the MCU, that I actively disliked while I was watching them.
Sure.
So that can happen, but I wasn't there. I was confused a little bit during some parts. And at the very least I was like, I'm not really sure why this is happening right now, but I'm entertained enough to be taken along for the ride, I guess.
Yeah.
As far as answering your question, how did it feel putting all this weight on this character? Because literally and figuratively, he's like the smallest Avenger, right?
Yes, there you go. Absolutely.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. Let's get into that, because we're going to talk a little bit about Kang as we go, I think.
Yeah, and they basically used my beloved Ant-Man as almost like a little platform for Kang to step up on and announce himself. And
well, fill me in.
This is it.
Do you watch the Disney Plus shows?
I don't, but I've watched a couple episodes here and there. Like, basically, you know, everybody's constantly talking about them week to week. And right. if an episode comes up that everyone's like, you have it's to important. See this episode, I jump in. Yeah, I'm kind of terrible at catching TV.
Okay, so I've a lot of the episodes. A lot of the credits that I have were on the Disney Plus shows. Right. And this, I don't know, maybe you don't know, but this is not the first time we've seen Kang so far.
Right. I've seen the that first one on the Loki show. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So that was one of my credits, was that one. That one I had to keep seeing for a while, actually. But
I bet.
So it's sort of interesting, and we could talk about this later too, but what Kang are we watching right now?
Right.
Because I think it's a different one in Loki as is in this movie. And, you know, from the end credits, there's more, but. It's sort of an interesting idea that you have one named bad guy, and yet there are many of them, and we're going to be exploring, you know, what that might mean. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Sure. And
a different kind of villain, maybe.
Right. It is a different kind of villain, and I think that's kind of perfect for this whole multiverse thing, which they're hanging everything on at this point. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this more as we're getting into puzzle pieces, but I have a little bit of a problem with the whole multiverse stuff because. Mm. The stakes just get kind of reduced to a zero
when anything
can happen. When Kang can get beaten by Ant-Man of all people, but he'll be on the next one, and everything's leading up to more Kang battles, you know? So it's
weird. I have to imagine they're going to go the route of a 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 are just as are more powerful. That's something that we can't overcome. You know, Thanos was just one big bad. How do you defeat him? And maybe if you have 1,000,000 lesser bads, that's equal to one big bad or something like that. How the math works, I don't know. But
yeah, I don't know. They'll figure it out, I'm sure. And obviously, it's making tons of money. It's people are happy, even if I wasn't 100% happy. But
what you talk about though is interesting on the as far as stakes go, because you're right. When you open the world up to anything, not only is possible but is happening.
Yeah.
What are the stakes then? Because if it goes right here, it went wrong 100 ways somewhere else. Or if it goes wrong here, it went right somewhere else. So who cares?
Right. Exactly. And this is my problem. It'll actually be a big part of my first puzzle piece. But you are the guest on the show, and I always go with the guest first. So what do you have for your first
puzzle piece?
Let's get into it.
All right. I kind of have these in an order of maybe smaller discussion towards bigger discussion. If you do something like that. But
yeah.
First puzzle piece. Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. Have you seen this movie?
Sure. I watched it once way back when it came out. This has been on my rewatch list for a while now. It's come up on the show a bunch of times, and I need to revisit it. Yeah.
So 2004 was the release. I can't believe it's been that long. Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, for the listeners who don't know, this is the very first all blue screen movie, or first all green screen movie. And it shows, but I think part of it's intentional, right? It's a throwback to old, like, 1940s serial comics. So it's supposed to kind of look like retrofuturism and, you know, sci-fi as we thought of it in 1940s and 50s. So it's sort of the tone of it anyways. But, it looks like a cartoon. And more and more, it just, to me, it feels like, of all the criticisms of Marvel, so many of them look more like a cartoon to me. Does that make sense?
Right. No, that makes total sense. And I'm glad you're starting with this, because this is another thing about the movie. And like I said, I'll get into my multiversal issues with my next puzzle piece. But another thing with the movie is the effects, the look of it all. Like, I think, you know, when you're the quantum realm is a cool diversion in the previous Ant-Man movies. When you spend the whole time in the quantum realm, what does anything mean? You know, what is big? What is small? What is up? What is down?
What are you and even like, looking at? Are these things like amoebas or single cell organisms? Or are they even smaller than that? Or are you someplace completely different?
It makes it really difficult. And like Sky Captain used that to create a really cool visual way of storytelling. Whereas this, I'm not quite sure what the end game, to use a Marvel pun, but you know, for something like this. Now I know you know some of the things that you worked on, like you worked on The Mandalorian that used some of these like the all around CGI sets and all that.
Right.
Like, and I know that that's like a big thing about the effects of this is that they used those kind of sets. That's actually a big thing here in Las Vegas. We opened a couple of those studios, and I know they're putting a lot of money into that here. Is that technology going to mesh better? Like, do you think that it can be made to where everything doesn't kind of feel like a big cartoon and actually has some weight to it?
Well, here's the thing that I think the problem is. It's we're over-engineered and we're trying so hard to show you something you've never seen before that it all kind of turns into the same thing, if that makes sense. Because when anything is possible, how do you rein that in? You know, part of what makes 80s, 90s action movies so great is they were just getting to the computer technology to do things that are impossible. But most of it was still really grounded. You know, you had to do it in a way. I mean, Jurassic Park still looks amazing because they had to really think about how are we going to do this in a way that makes it look real.
Yeah.
But when you're just and Sky Captain is the same thing. When you have your two actors, the whole movie standing on a ground, you know, next to each other and nothing around them, you know, in real life.
Yeah.
You have a lot of imagination to be able to fill that stuff. And eventually it's like, well, what are we even looking at anyways? It's just like colors and shapes and it's almost gone too far, if that makes sense. I'm all for using blue screen.
Yeah, me too. It's CGI. I mean, I love Avatar, you know?
sometimes you have to do it. And it makes sense. If you can't afford to fly your whole production around the world to go to a desert, put one out the window. You know, that's fine. Or if you're in space, you're going to put, you know, a green screen out the window and it's going to be space. But man, when literally everything that you're looking at is created. See, Avatar is an interesting one because it's the same thing. It was all created. But I think that it was, you know, but for better or for worse, if you like the Avatar movie or not, at its simplicity, but it still stayed kind of grounded, right? There are rules in this world. There's gravity and there's water and there's earth and people have to walk around and hold their breaths. And, you know, you still have to follow rules that we understand. And it made more sense to see a sunset. Well, we know what that means, even though it's on a different planet, but man, it became confusing to say the least for me in the quantum world.
I watch Avatar and I'm like, I can imagine that those Na'vi probably had to build that bridge that they're walking over right now.
Sure, sure.
I watch Ant-Man and I'm like, no, this was just painted. Like,
who put this together?
Like, nobody made any of this, you know? Nobody made the decision to put that building there, that living, breathing building. Like, it's just, it's just anything can happen at any moment. But I feel like a bunch of those technological attempts at leaps will come up in my other puzzle pieces too. But let's go to my multiversal one. I joked on Letterboxd that this would be my first puzzle piece if I ended up covering this movie, and that's going to be the Cloverfield Paradox from 2018.
Oh, nice. Okay. So were you one of the ones who watched this right after the Super Bowl that night?
Yes. I watched it right away.
Me too. I was so hyped on it. I can't, because I'd heard about this movie coming out. In fact, I was in Los Angeles when they were shooting it, and I had some coworkers who had gone to set, and then, oh, that's the God Particle. That might be a Cloverfield movie. You know, there's whispers about this happening. And when it finally landed, oh man, I was hyped on it. And now tell me, what did you think?
And it absolutely took away all possible stakes of my beloved Cloverfield movie trilogy, because now it doesn't matter what happened in the other movies. It doesn't matter what happened. Anything could happen. And that is, I don't think that fits well with storytelling. I guess it's a comic book thing, and it works in comic books because everybody wants to just have an endless stream of comic books. And so I could see where that would work. But when it comes to a movie, I want to know there's some big threat, and that threat, if they don't if they don't save the day, yeah, like
big stakes, the stakes are real.
There's big stakes. Nothing matters after the Cloverfield paradox. Like J.J. Abrams and the director of, who I can't remember, isn't Jules something, but they said like, oh yeah, no, nothing matters. Like anything could happen from these 2 hours and forget about it. And I feel like that's what they did with Quantumania here. And it's like, yeah, there are things to like about both movies. I wouldn't say that it's a complete misfire on either case, but the problem being that it throws continuity out the window.
Right. Interesting. So I think it might be too early to tell where they're going with this. I really want to trust Marvel that they have it all mapped out and figured out in a way that is going to work for us. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think we just don't know. So we can only talk about this movie as it is. And I think you're right. When you introduce those stakes, or the fact that stakes don't exist anymore, you're in tricky territory. So while we're talking about this, can I bring up my next puzzle piece?
Go for it.
Okay, so I've got another one that deals with multidimensional stuff, and it's called Mr. Nobody.
Oh, have you heard of this?
Okay.
No.
The year was 2009, starring a young Jared Leto before he was the Joker, before he may have been Prefontaine already at this point. This is a interesting multidimensional movie before it was a thing, really, right? So I'll just give you like the brief setup for this. Is he's an old man far in the future. It looks crazy sci-fi. It would not feel, you know, totally different than the quantum realm, maybe, actually. Okay. And he's thinking back on his life, and he has this, I don't even know how you would describe it, power maybe, or ability that he can see the different lives that he would have lived had he made different decisions. So the whole movie follows three different choices that he made throughout his life. One was when his parents get divorced, he lives with his mom or with his dad. And then later on in life, he has a choice between two women that he is going to marry, either this one or this one. And so for the whole movie, you're switching back and forth between these three different possible lives. Mm. And he's trying to decide which one is going to bring him happiness.
Sure. Kind of like Sliding Doors, the Gwyneth Paltrow movie.
And it all comes to the end, and in a way that the old him kind of knows that all of these are happening at the same time, and he has to make a decision on which one it's going to be his life, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
So that being said, I think there is a way to do multidimensional stories in a way that does still have stakes. And the thing is, the stakes have to be in a way smaller. It has to be personal. It has to be, you know, intimate with why the decisions are being made, and what does that say about us as an individual, or as a, you know, as a people, whatever it is. So I want to have faith that they're going to go down that road and make it a personal story and make it mean something.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Yet to be decided.
Yeah, we'll see. And they've certainly had plenty of success, both, you know, both financially and just people loving what they've done. And so there's no reason to think that they won't be able to figure it out. It's just, it's so hard to see at this point, but I'm sure that they will. But yeah, that's a great piece though. And it sounds like an interesting movie.
It's funny. I meant to look this up. There was a book I read when I was younger too, that was all alternate histories. And I'm sorry, I don't have the title. Maybe I'll have to email you afterwards if I go find it. But there was a short story in there about a detective living in a world where they had also discovered multidimensional, you know, possibilities, and they were taking technology and sharing it with other versions of themselves. And the end of it was, he looked at a gun and thought, should I shoot myself in the head right now? Mm-hmm. Because in one universe, I am going to do that. And in this one, I'm not. But does it really matter? And it's the same question that you're asking. Like, if all of it is happening, then why do we care about this one? And that was the existential crisis of that story, was he was kind of trapped. Wow. Like, none of it really matters at all. Oh. That, the end. It's like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah. It's all becoming, I mean, we know that the writer of this was one of the Rick and Morty writers, and you know, everything was like Rick and Morty-ish, and
all the different possibilities. That,
like, yeah, mind blowing stuff. But I'm gonna combine a couple of puzzle pieces here, because they kind of go in the same territory as your Sky Captain piece. And so I figure I'll kind of throw these together in a way. I'm gonna go with David Lynch's Dune adaptation.
Ooh, okay.
And I'm going to go with John Carter, the failed Disney attempt to make a movie out of the John Carter story.
Yeah.
Both of which are just like so out there and specific in their sci-fi mm-hmm. that it they feel a little kind of gobbledygook, you yes. know, and like there's yes. just so much weird stuff going on. And if you're not along for the ride, you're just gonna be lost. And I feel like with Quantumania, that's like kind of the problem where it's like, if you're not like in on, oh, okay, this is just pure nonsense, just silliness with these characters, with this you know, this Gloop character who's obsessed with how many holes he has,
right,
and
right.
With you know, buildings that are living, and like all this, just this weird crap being thrown at the screen. You know, you're just going to be so lost in not knowing what the hell's going on. But there's a lot of funny in all of that. And I actually just rewatched John Carter for the first time. I know that movie was like a huge flop for Disney.
Right, it was. I actually like John Carter, though.
I do too. I think it's not that bad. We actually just covered it on my other podcast, Awesome Movie Year, and because we're covering 2012, so it's obviously the box office flop of the year.
Yes,
and
totally.
Yeah, and in rewatching it, I was like, yeah, man, this movie, it's ridiculous, but it's fun. And
right.
I think that they're going for some of that same thing. Like, come along for this ride. We promise you it's going to be weird. But
it's going to be weird. It's going to be wild. You're going to see some crazy, like,
yeah.
fever dream stuff.
If you can vibe with us for just 2 hours, you're going to maybe have a good time.
Now, I don't have that experience with David Lynch's Dune.
Okay.
I was at the right age when Sci-Fi Channel had their Dune, and I never read the books, but I enjoyed that Dune for what it was, because it was my mm-hmm. first, you know, interaction with that property. Loved the new Dune. Yeah. And when I was in college, I went back and I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch this old Dune movie. And wow, that movie is nuts.
It's bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre. But there's some really like charmingly weird effects in it that like
yes.
I think are like really fun to watch. Like that's the thing about movies from that era. It's like even if they're not necessarily good, they could have some like really fun stuff in there. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, man, that's funny. Okay, well, my next puzzle piece kind of is going to piggyback on that one, and this is not a movie. This is a video game. You're a gamer?
I have been off and on through my life. I'm ready.
So I haven't since I had kids, because there's just no time for that anymore one day. But one of my favorite franchises ever was Mass Effect.
Oh, sure.
Do you know this one?
I do. I've never actually played the games, but a lot of my friends have, and like I've heard of many aspects of it.
It's like a... I guess they kind of focus on that the fact that you can make choices and those choices really matter like down the road,
sure.
even in the next game, because it keeps track of what you chose in number one for number two and number three. But it takes a lot of homage to Star Wars, Star Trek. It's basically big sci-fi, lots of different aliens, lots of different species, lots of different planets flying all over the galaxy. And I think it fits right in with your, John Carter and Dune, and it's just all about world building. And in this case, though, Mass Effect is great. And I bet your listeners know that, because it's so deep in the lore of like each alien and each species and why they are the way they are. It's the opposite of what you were describing. Why did they have this here? Like, who built this? It makes no sense. It's just here because they wanted it to be in the movie, versus in Mass Effect series, it's like very well thought out. Like these creatures look this way because of the like size of planet that they were on, had a higher gravity, so they evolved to be, you know, big and flat, you know, that kind
of thing. Yeah, every aspect of world building is like really truly thought out and planned out and everything. And yeah, I think that's a great one. And also, I don't know if you had Star Wars on your list. I did not.
I refuse to put it on because it seems so obvious.
It's so obvious, exactly. And so I think Mass Effect, I guess you could say John Carter is,
I mean,
too.
We have a straight up cantina band scene in this movie.
Yeah, it's basically the cantina scene for about 90 minutes of the movie or something, or maybe like 80 to 90 minutes. But yeah, no, Mass Effect is a good version of that, though.
They wanted to do the world building in this, but they just didn't. They were trying to put too much in, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of world to build, and it's just, I don't know. I'm going to go to another puzzle piece because it deals with some of that, and it's maybe too new to really be a puzzle piece. But
okay, interesting.
I thought it would fit anyway here, especially with the Disney connection. I wanted to go with last year's Strange World. I thought was a lot of fun. I know it did not do very well at the box office.
Because people didn't even know it was coming out. It just happened.
Yeah.
Or what it was.
Exactly.
Or
it just it just kind of came, it was gone, and everybody said, what happened? Like, you know, it's you know, for your consideration, what happened? But you know, it's a really fun movie though, and when it goes into this like inside world where everything is just wacky and weird and super sci-fi, mm-hmm. It feels like we're doing the same thing with the quantum world here, and it's it's as weird, but everything kind of has a little bit more of a thought out feeling to it in Strange World. And I think that's why it kind of works a little bit better. I do think it's weird also in Quantumania. They kind of treat the quantum world as almost like a center of the earth kind of story, even though technically it's not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be shrunken down to, you know, micro, nano, whatever, and it's not inside the earth, it's not below the earth, but I think they even say that multiple times, we're below the earth, like multiple times in the movie, and they're kind of like kind of getting that confused, because I think it's just so complicated to build it out.
I don't know, man. I was wondering this multiple times, like, where are they? Are they really within an atom in the room that they shrunk down in?
Right.
Or are they someplace else? And if it's so small, is this happening an infinite amount of places, like even in the one room? You know, like what are the odds that Kang landed
there's
here?
A billion of these per inch. It's a very, I mean, I guess it would be tough to wrap your head around, but it also, it straight up doesn't necessarily work if you
doesn't
think about
sense.
It, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's just an excuse to like create these magical, fantastical worlds. And
the later thing that Marvel's been doing is they have all these different kind of layers, right? Where you've got in Black Panther, you got the layer of like the ancestors where they live. And then in Miss Marvel, you probably didn't watch, but they've got another layer that's like the Nor, where another race live. And you've got the quantum realm where these people live. And man, it's just strange. Like, and then you've got the multi-universe where I guess all of those have these different layers also. Man, I just don't know how it all fits together.
It's tough to keep track of, and like, here's the thing, like I hope that people who grew up with these comics absolutely love this movie. I hope they love it, but as just a movie guy that has no clue what's going on,
same. I never read the comics, but I have to believe this is what it was always like, right?
Yeah, where exactly
just different stories have different rules and it's never really gonna all line up, but we'll do the best we can.
Exactly. What do you have for your next piece?
Let's see. Okay. We've talked a lot about multidimensional stuff. We've talked a lot about visuals. I want to talk about, okay, this one's going out there. Have you heard of The Harder They Fall?
Ooh. Okay. With Jonathan Majors and...
Yes. That's it.
Yeah.
So this was a Netflix movie. Great. It's a Western. And really, I'm just going to turn your podcast now for a few minutes into the Jonathan Majors show, because am buying up all the Jonathan Majors stock that I can right now. I think this guy is going to be huge. The first time I saw him was in that Harder They Fall, and I was like, holy cow, who is this guy? He's so good to me. Every line that he says, every facial, like micro expression that he makes feels like he has the weight of the world on his shoulders in every character he plays. It's like, man, this guy is tough time just being alive. Every step he takes is work. Every character he plays has the saddest backstory ever. And man, same thing on, if, I don't know if you watched that show, Lovecraft Country, same thing.
I haven't seen that, but have you seen the Last Black Man in San Francisco?
I haven't seen that one.
That was the first time I saw him, and he's so good in it. And yeah, I mean, it's just role after role, he is just absolutely killing it.
He's in the new Creed 3. I've got a couple friends who have worked on that movie while they were shooting it, and he said that Jonathan Majors steals the show every time, every scene that he's in. And man, he's so good, it almost makes me feel uncomfortable. Like, man, whoever has to be acting with him is at a disadvantage, because I feel like he just overpowers. I think he's a great choice to play a big villain in a different way than maybe we've seen before. I'm excited to see where we go with it. But
And like you said, that post-credits scene, like it kind of it shows that he is going to really get to stretch his legs as this character.
How weird can we get?
Yeah, what the movies are going to look like, who knows? Hopefully, you know, a little better than this one, maybe. But, you know, he is going to get to do a lot of interesting stuff. So, yeah, I you know, as far as The Harder They Fall is great, and I think underappreciated. I had so much fun with that movie.
Man, it was so good. I sat down to watch it. I was like, yeah, I'm in for a Western right now. And I was hooked within the first 5 minutes. That was one of the ones that you watch and you're like, man, has anyone seen this? Does anyone know about this movie? It's so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the kind of movie that makes me mad, actually, because that's, man, I wish I could make something like that.
For sure.
That's a first time director, and dude, knocked it out of the park.
Well, I'm gonna combine a movie and a movie that was inspired by that movie for my next piece here, because why not? I'm gonna go with The Wizard of Oz and Army of Darkness because it was its 30-year anniversary this week. So
yeah, okay, but this is just like Wizard of Oz, isn't it?
Right? Yeah. I mean, Paul Rudd and his family in this case, but get sucked into this fantastical world. They have to meet up with all these new friends along the way. They have to return this magical doodad to be able to get home. It's Wizard of Oz. It's Army of Darkness. It's a million other things that have used that story kind of trope along the way. And it's a great way to structure a movie because you get to see this great world, you get to see all these characters. It doesn't always work out quite as well, but it's a great setup. Nice.
I wonder if there's some Wizard of Oz Easter eggs hidden in there. There's so much to look at that I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah,
totally.
Interesting.
Well, what do you got for your next piece?
All right, maybe you have never heard of this before, but I'm talking about MODOK a little bit.
Oh boy, here we go.
So have you ever seen the movie called Thumb Wars? Do you remember that one?
Oh, is this with
Steve Odekirk?
So Steve Odekirk, yeah, the Kung Pao guy.
Yeah, that's right. It was before Kung Pao.
Yeah.
Every time MODOK popped up on screen, all I could think of was Thumb Wars because it looked the exact same. It was like a weird stretched face. And this is not human.
I watched that like incredibly inebriated. I don't remember any of it, but I gotta rewatch it.
All right, listen, it's on YouTube. They just released I looked it up today. There's a 4K version on YouTube officially released, and it is ridiculous as ever. And if you liked the character MODOK, buckle up for some Thumb Wars, because okay, I know we weren't gonna talk about Star Wars, but it's basically Star Wars, New Hope, and Empire Strikes Back combined into a 30-minute short. And
yeah,
all the characters are thumbs and superimpose eyes and mouths, no noses, on their thumbs. And they go through basically the same thing Robot Chicken and Family Guy did with Star Wars, except before any of that.
Yeah, they all do it eventually. Yeah.
And it's crazy. And every time I saw MODOK, all I could see was Thumb Wars. And I said, yeah, we're talking about Thumb Wars on this show. We have to.
That's an incredible piece. I'm so happy you brought that one up, and a great reminder that I need to rewatch it. And I'm such a big Kung Pao fan, so I'm all in on that. I can't wait for the sequel that's been promised for like 20 years now. But
I never heard that. Really?
Yeah, he's been saying forever that he's going to do it, and it never seems to materialize.
I don't know that I've seen a Odekirk thing in forever.
No, he hasn't done anything.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Let me ask you this before we move on to another one. Were you ready for some MODOK butt?
I mean, was anybody in
What went through MODOK your mind? Butt? First time we're going to see nudity in a Marvel movie, and here it is.
Yeah. Why not? Why not? You know, it's a good one.
I did a double take. Did I just see what I thought I saw?
Man, that character. Okay, let's talk about that for a quick second before we move on here. I think that deserves like a little tangent here. Like, I don't even know what to do with that. Like,
it was the comic relief, right? It's just supposed to be like a goofy bad guy that we can all laugh at.
I'm sitting here complaining about this movie a lot, and that's one thing I'm not going to complain about because Corey Stahl is great. And
I'm glad they did a flashback because I wouldn't have even figured out who that was.
It's just so stupid, but it's kind of what I wanted, I guess, is even stupider. I don't know. It kind of goes to show that maybe I don't know what I want out of Ant-Man 3, but if that worked, but some of the other stuff didn't, I don't know. It's such a weird character.
It was so weird, and I loved
just like how it looked visually because it's so bananas. Yeah. Oh man.
Wow. I will go with, I should have written down which one it is. It's one of the Matrix sequels when there's a million Mr. Andersons. Is it Reloaded or is it something or other? Is it Revolutions? Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that. I was just wrote down Matrix sequels. I should have looked it up first. I'm bad at this. But anyway, when we get hundreds of thousands of Ant-Mans for the big sequence where he has to get the magical doodad thingy.
Oh, yeah. Good one.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? That does happen. Thing. No, that does happen in Reloaded, and then it happens again.
Okay.
Because eventually Agent Smith takes over the whole Matrix, and it's all him. That's the end of Revolutions. Yeah, yeah.
There we go. So it's both sequels. I'm good.
Yeah, you're good.
Look at that.
That was a kind of wild sequence, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, it was very weird, and I don't know. Okay, here we go. I'm complaining again. I don't want to sit here and complain about this movie, but this is, again, when anything is possible, you see a sequence like that that should blow our minds. Mm-hmm. Like, how did they do this with so many Paul Rudds? But it's like, they obviously can do anything at this point.
Right, right.
So yeah, it kind of takes away a little bit.
How do you one-up yourself anymore? Because you've gone as far as you can.
Right, exactly. They should pull back a little, so that way moments like that and moments like MODOK, impact you a little.
Having one Baskin-Robbins version of him in there was cracking me up, though.
That was good. Yeah. Paul Rudd is great, and there's so much, there's great Paul Rudd stuff in here, and that's what saved the movie for me, really. Like, it's not that, anybody else was bad necessarily,
He's just so dang likable.
He's just so good, yeah. And that's the main thing I went for, is I want Paul Rudd in a big superhero movie, and so at least you do still get some of that, and so, that still makes it a worthwhile watch.
I'm wondering if what you love about Ant-Man is the fact that it's more grounded. It's like this isn't a superhero movie. It's just like schmuck who fell into this. And there isn't a lot of superpower stuff. The fight, in the first one, the big fight is like on a kid's toy table. That's the kind of stuff that's fun.
That's fun because you get to see the comparison to how big he gets, how small he gets, to all those kids toys and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It really plays with the concept of Ant-Man.
It also plays with the concept of what's a third act of a Marvel movie, because we're so used to being punch, punch, kick, kick. But what about when you're with toys? It's kind of a joke on the whole thing.
Yeah.
But absolutely. Now we're clearly into territory where it's like, this is Thor. This is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, this could have been Guardians of the Galaxy, exactly. Like you're saying, this could have been the next Guardians of the Galaxy storyline, but, instead we'll see what we get with that in a month. But, this would have fit perfectly with what they do.
Right. So maybe it was just that it strayed a little too far from what Ant-Man was supposed to be in the MCU, but...
Yeah. Well, what do you have? I have one more piece.
Go for it. I'm out.
There you go. I will throw in Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
Oh, nice.
Sci-fi. This kind of follows a lot of what we've already talked about, actually. Star Wars, of course, but, also Dune, also, John Carter, Mass Effect, even the video game you brought up.
Just so, so boring.
Yeah, it just, why couldn't they pull it? The visuals were incredible, and it has so many ideas to it.
Yeah,
it
great
doesn't
ideas.
Doesn't quite land it. Doesn't land it. I don't know.
But man, this is boring. I should be liking this so much. Yeah.
That's how I felt the whole time watching this movie. I'm like, why am I not just having so much fun? I love trippy stuff in movies. Why aren't I liking this? But it definitely feels a lot like Valerian. So I think that's a good list of puzzle pieces. I'm going to read down them and we'll get into some closing thoughts here. But we talked about Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow, The Cloverfield Paradox, Mr. Nobody, Dune, John Carter, Mass Effect, Strange World, The Harder They Fall, The Wizard of Oz, and Army of Darkness, Thumb Wars, The Matrix sequels, and Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. I think we get into just so many weird science fiction-y things that are just trying to build these crazy worlds out, and that is such a hard thing to pull off. So it's like, you don't want to, Peyton Reed is awesome. I love Peyton Reed, You don't want to, put it down too much because it is a difficult thing to pull off when there's so much going on here. But I just don't think it all kind of came together.
Right. It's tough, man. It's tough to make big budget movie, especially in this world where everything matters. You know, the studio is telling you, you got to fit this other stuff in because it matters for that. That was all the jokes at She-Hulk at the end was, it's important we get these characters in because it matters for the next thing, even though it doesn't matter to you.
Right.
So it's tough. Can I point out one more trope that always cracks me up in these?
Sure.
It's when distance doesn't seem to make sense. Like in Independence Day, they jump into a plane and they fly around for a couple minutes and then all of a sudden they're in Utah. You're like, how did you get from LA to Utah? And like,
sure.
This one had a big one. Remember where she turns around and she's like, take the tower. And you see the tower in the background.
Yeah.
And that tower was 2 miles away.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
It had to have been.
They're going to be running for 20 minutes before they get there. It always cracks me up when they do stuff like that. Dude, why is it so far? Like, what? It makes no sense. How are you going to just run there?
It's a really tricky thing when you're in this kind of, like, nothing matters world. Like, things like that just don't work. But,
I thought that was so funny.
You know, the only other thing I wanted to bring up, and really, as much as I've complained on this episode, the biggest problem with the movie, where was Michael Pena?
How do you drop Michael Pena? Dude,
what are we doing?
It's the easiest layup. You got to have him here and you got to just do the joke over and over again. It's always funny.
Put him in the post-credit scene
and tell the story.
That would have been fine.
And it's just so silly.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
My biggest complaint probably was just act three. Like I think maybe I mentioned this earlier, was I just didn't understand like what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to get the thing so that he can teleport out of here. Why doesn't he just do it now? And yet he's waiting and we're trying to fight him for it and stop him from going. And it seems like Ant-Man and Wasp are going to be stuck down here, but then 10 seconds later, we figured out how to get you back. So, you know, no worries at the end. It's like nothing really happened, you know?
That absolutely. And that goes back to my stakes issue is like, you know, we got these speeches from Kang. We now know how big of a threat he is, you know, I suppose. But as far as what happened from beginning to end, everybody is in the same place where they were when it started. Like, you know, this particular story didn't necessarily get us anywhere. There's still a Kang out there in the quantum realm. Ant-Man's still with his family in New York or wherever it was. And, you know, it's the same thing.
Well, end of the day, I still give this a recommend because it was entertaining enough. I wasn't sitting there actively angry at what I was watching, which I have done with some other superhero movies that have not fallen into the MCU. But I had some laughs. There was some crazy stuff to look at. Oh, we didn't even talk about Bill Murray. I don't know what he was doing in this movie. it's not the best. It's not the worst. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from Quantumania because you have a movie that I actually watched a couple of weeks ago, Solid Rock Trust, which I actually really enjoyed. You know, as far as like this kind of single location thriller, for people who haven't seen it, the idea is it's all told from the point of view of kind of the ringleader of this bank heist, who you're seeing all of her conversations with the people who are out on the job making it happen. And normally that's just a voice on the phone, but we're seeing it from the other side of it. And is that a good explanation?
Yeah, love it. Kind of, thank you.
There you go. And it's a really, really clever setup for this kind of single location thing.
Yeah. Thanks. The other hook is that, you know, while we were writing it, I was trying to like throw in as much as I could to keep this interesting. Cause I know it's a tough sell. I mean, this is not a Marvel movie. We had the Marvel catering budget for a week to put this one together.
Yeah.
But sure. So what can we put in that, you know, that's cheap or free? And so one of those things was she has a bunch of different accents that she does, and she has a bunch of different languages. And she's, I mean, the hook is everyone she's talking to doesn't know it's all her. So they all think they're talking to somebody different. And she's putting this facade on that she's multiple different people and none of them have the full story. She's the only one who has the full story. And then it all goes wrong. Of course, it's a bank heist movie, so it has to. Cops get called. We got shootouts. We got backstabbings, double crossings, lots of surprises, lots of twists and turns. Except
absolutely
what you said, exactly right. It's all from her perspective and watching her you know, try to navigate this ordeal as it gets worse and worse and worse for her.
Yeah. So you hold the tension like really well through this thing being, you know, in this one setup, but, you know, obviously a lot of the credit has to go on this actress. Coco Marshall is her name, right?
Yeah, that's right. She's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Was she somebody you had worked with before? Or
never.
How did that collaboration work out?
We put out a casting call. She was one of the people who showed up for an audition. Her reel was great because it showed her doing the different accents, which, by the way, I showed the script to a bunch of people and they all said, this is great. Super fun. It's fast paced, exciting. But you're never going to find an actress to do this because nobody can do that.
Sure. Yeah.
And we found her. We actually started to do this before COVID hit and then everything got postponed. Okay. So I didn't actually talk to her right after the audition, even though I really liked her, because I'm like, what am I going to do? Hey, I'd like to do this movie with you some point. I don't really know when, but are you interested? So I just sat on
ever changes.
Yeah. And waited and waited and waited and called her up. I think it was almost a year later, actually. Said, hey, you came in to audition for this part. I'd like to send you the script and see if you're interested. And she was totally on board. In fact, she brought more accents than were in the script originally just because she could do more. She said, can I change some of these? I said, yeah, go for it. By all means.
That's awesome.
So she was just great, man. She showed up. She knew all her lines. We could go for minutes at 10 pages at a time and she would not miss a beat. And the room we were in was 95 degrees and 100% humidity. And she never had a frown on her face. She was just ready to go every day and just a wonderful experience with her.
Wow. Well, you know, I want to ask you about like the idea for this film, because like, was this something that the idea was initially, you know, to do something like this, or was it born out of like trying to do something like on a smaller scale?
Both. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I wanted to do a single room thing because I love those kind of movies. Every time one pops up on Netflix, I'm like, dude, I've never heard of this, but I have to do it. I have to watch this. Buried is a good one. Locke is a good one.
Have you ever seen Grand Piano?
I've never heard of that one. Grand Piano.
It's a movie I didn't know about until just a couple of years ago. It was actually written by Damien Chazelle before he directed anything.
Oh, okay.
And it's so good. It's a single location at this concert, and man, it's so good. But I agree, though. I love that kind of genre.
You know? Cube. You're a sci-fi fan. What do you think about the Cubes?
Sure.
Yeah. Love those. So I was like, what can I do that's a single room? I thought it would be interesting if she had a whole bunch of phones, but why would she need to be calling all these people? And then I decided, I like bank heist movies. There's a lot there to mine. You know, there's a lot of things that happen in a bank heist movie that we could play with. And it just seemed like a good fit. So I don't know. It's kind of like a sculpture. You know, you have this idea, but it's a big block. And then you start chipping away at it and throwing in more here, a little more there, a little more there. And soon it starts to feel like something full. And what I really didn't want for it ever to be was boring. And I don't know, tell me, were you ever bored in it? Was there slow spots?
I was not, no.
I just tried to make it as fast as we could, and something is changing every 10 to 15 minutes. And so, you know, if you're starting to get bored or wondering what's happening, just wait, because we're about to flip it on a dime and do something, you know, go off in a different direction.
Well, the funny thing is part of the kind of high wire act of it is, will she be able to pull this off, and will you be able to pull this off? Will you be able to pull the movie off at the same time? You know, because it's like this could go bad at any moment because it's a difficult thing to pull off. But that tension stays.
A lot
the whole
of people
time.
Have said that actually. They would say, "Oh, I was scared for you. I was scared for you as the filmmaker. Like, is this going to be so boring by the end?"
That's funny. That's funny.
So yeah, you're right. In fact, one review we had was talking about how it was partly her, like she steals the show, obviously. She's like the whole thing. But also the director, you know, like they have to be working together and they have to be kind of in step, which I hadn't really realized at the time, but I think that is a good description of it. Yeah, it's scary. I mean, it's tough to say I'm going to put all this time and effort into this thing that by all accounts should be the slowest, boringest thing, you know, watching somebody on a phone for an hour and a half. But I don't know. I think we put enough in there to keep your attention and take you on a ride. And hopefully at the end of it, you feel like you've like come someplace, you know, like you've gone on a journey, even though it's basically real time. It's basically 90 real minutes, you know, in this person's life. And at the end of it, we feel like we've come so far and we know her so well. But
yeah, absolutely. Well, do you have anything you're working on right now that you want to mention?
I'm always working on Marvel stuff. So of those things, no.
Yeah, sure. I can imagine.
And you can check my IMDb. I usually put it up, you know, whenever I'm off the project is when it's allowed. So a couple things that haven't been released yet. And then, let's see, I just edited a documentary that's going to be about the first, one of the first American skateboarders in the Olympics, which is a cool, like, feel-good sports doc about skateboarding. Small-town kid makes good. And then I've got a couple more scripts written. We'll see if I get, you know, another spot in my schedule that's free for a month or two that I could put something together. Hopefully I can come back if that materializes.
Yeah. But absolutely. I would love to have you back. Where can people find Solid Rock Trust and everything else that you're working on?
Oh, yeah. Check the show notes. I'll send you the link where, you know, that'll be updated where you can find it. But it's available for free on Tubi. You can do a rental right now on Amazon, on Google Play, and YouTube Movies. And then if you're listening to this after June 2023, it will be on YouTube everywhere for free through our distributor. And it will be rolling out to more places soon. But you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, all the social stuff.
Cool.
Twitter.
Awesome. I always end these episodes asking if there's a movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners. Do you have anything that you watched recently? Any new movies?
Man, what did I watch recently?
Oh, it's always the hardest question.
Well, you know what? You mentioned Letterboxd, and I'm on that too. Because I love tracking like all my scores and then seeing what I'm usually doing. Mm-hmm. You know what? It's probably all the movies that everyone knows because it's a award season right now.
Right. So we're all kind of catching up.
Since we talked about Star Wars, I'm finally watching Star Wars with my kids. Oh, and they're a great revisit, man. It's been fun.
I bet.
We watched the part one, and the only question my four-year-old had when it was over, which was, how come Chewbacca didn't get a medal?
There you go.
I said, you know what? I don't know. In fact, we've been asking that question for a long, long time.
Yeah. Nice. That kid's going to have a YouTube channel eventually. But, Rick, this was great. Thank you again for being here. And yeah, absolutely. I'd love to have you back again sometime.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's been so fun. I loved ripping this movie to pieces with you. Or putting it back together, whichever.
Yeah, and piecing it back together, right? I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Thanks to Rick Ives for joining me on that one. Make sure to check out his film, Solid Rock Trust. There's a link in the show notes. It's a fun film, and I think you should check it out. Also, of course, make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. If you like what we do here on the show with all the puzzle pieces and all that, maybe drop a 5-star rating wherever it is you're listening. Also, get in touch with me. Rick got in touch with me, and here he is talking about Ant-Man with me. If you'd like to maybe guest on an episode of Piecing It Together in the future, there's always movies that I am looking to cover, and I'm always looking for new guests. So get in touch on the socials at PiecingPod, or my email address is on the website, PiecingPod.com. So get in touch. I love hearing from people. You can also, of course, check out our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And I told you about the Patreon at the top of the show, but don't forget, produced by David Rosen. Lots of great content. Let's close this out with a piece of music like I always do. And I got to go weird with this one. So I'm going to go for a track from my album, A Different Kind of Dream. I'm going to go with the song Waterfalls in Reverse. This seems like a weird one. That'll fit well. So yeah, let's go with Waterfalls in Reverse from the album A Different Kind of Dream. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.